Our archers moved out of the way to the flanks as the main body of the enemy closed upon us. Over on the right wing, I heard Earl Sabbat order his companies to angle backwards so as to try and deny the more numerous enemy access to our flanks. They were closer now, only 20 yards away, and both sides started to hurl small javelins and throwing axes. Edward groaned as an axe bounced off his shield and gashed across his right shoulder. Another warrior, in the front rank, fell, with a javelin impaled through his arm, and he was dragged back screaming to the rear. The ranks closed up to fill the gap. Our missiles found targets as well, and a scarred old veteran was hit in the leg, tripped and fell, and the youth stumbled over him, leaving them both in a heap on the ground. But still their army came on. They were 5 yards away now, so I straightened my arm and then brought my spear up so as to be ready to strike down over an enemy shield. Suddenly, I saw Husser. There he was in the Almatase shield wall, towards the rear. He had a helmet too, as well as a shirt of mail armour, so I figured that some of the worth of my mother's earring had perhaps already been spent. He was not far away from me now, maybe just 30 yards, and I wondered if I could work my way over to him. But as soon as I had the thought, he was gone from sight, as the warrior in front of him lifted his shield higher. Then, all thoughts of Husser were banished, as the Welsh charged us. A huge, red-headed warrior with a battle axe came screaming towards us, followed by 4 others just ahead of their main shield wall. He leapt at our front rank and brought the great blade down upon a warrior from the village. The poor fellow was lucky to die at once, as he was cut almost in two by the blow. This was the wedge tactic at work. The enemy were trying to cut their way into our shield wall to make a breach and pour through the gap. A moment later, the armies collided as spears splintered against shields. The force of the blow knocked some men right off their feet, and the enemy fell upon those warriors and hewed at them. Edward lunged forward with his spear and skewered a man through the neck. He roared in triumph as the victim crashed back through the ranks. My spear, however, smashed against a shield boss, and to my alarm, the spearhead snapped right off. Now, in the crush of bodies, I struggled to find my sword. Eventually, my fingers folded around the hilt, and I pulled it free of the baldric and brought it up high. The world was now filled with the pleas of the dying, the screams of the living, the clatter of shields, and the ring of blades, as the two bodies of men pushed against each other. To me it seemed that any strategy had been abandoned. Victory and defeat depended simply on who would tire first, and who would give way. There was a sudden shout of alarm from my right. Looking that way, helped by our position on rising ground, I saw that one of the companies from Ere Forwick was beginning to fall back, pushed by the Welsh to the front, and also threatened on their flank by a score of enemy warriors that were overlapping that wing of our army. Once they broke, the enemy would be able to get round behind us. I was not alone in spotting this because, along the whole army, I could feel that panic was now rising. The enemy sensed this too, for they pushed forward, eager for the kill. Then horn sounded from Stanwick camp, and I could see now that the gates had opened, and out from the fortress charged the companies of Darens that had held it. They ran out with no thought for formation. Their leaders had grasped that speed was essential, and like a river in flood they surged down upon the left and rear of the Welsh, just where the pressure of their attack had almost led to disaster for us. The tide of battle now swung back our way again. Soon, we had united with our fellow companies from the fortress and were pushing the Welsh west and north, so we had swung round and the camp was to our rear. The Welsh counterattacked and brought in as fresh reinforcements the redundant companies who had been watching the fortress. For an instant, the situation again hung in the balance. Then, our counterattack began to lose impetus. At that moment, a soul trumpet sounded, bright and loud, away to the north. It was soon joined by others. They swelled into a fanfare, and seconds later, out of the woods to the north, cavalry emerged. The Welsh leaders had prepared a surprise that they now expected would win them the battle. Of that charge, poems and songs had been written. The most moving was penned by the Welsh poet Aneurin, who was present amongst their ranks. Years later, they were popular in the court of King Cadfan of Gwynedd, which is where I heard it. What a race the Welsh are for song, songs of joy, songs of beauty, and songs of war. How does it go? Warriors went to Catraeth, embattled with a cry, a host of horsemen in dark blue armour, charging nigh, spear shafts held aloft, of sharp steel pointed, and shining swords, which the Angles with death anointed. Well, I've never been much of a poet, but I agree with Aneurin's theme. the charge of the Gododin was indeed magnificent. There were 300 strong. Every one rode a fine steed and wore mail shirts that, in the late afternoon sun, had a blue tinge to them. Each carried a shield, painted blue with an eagle designed in the centre. Forward they charged with lance and blade. Forward the Gododin, allies of Strathclyde and Reged, charging to bring death and defeat to us English. I had seen how frightening just a few dozen cavalry were in Elmet. 300 was, frankly, terrifying. They started under the trees and moved forward a little way into the open fields. They halted there a moment to form up. Then the captain of the company raised his sword aloft and brought it down to point at the flank of our army. There was a second fanfare, and the cavalry began walking forward. Then they were trotting, and finally galloping. Faster and faster the horses went, urged on by their riders. Now, as they closed, the lancers were brought down to point at the enemy, to point at us. My fellow Angles to our right had seen their doom. Men in their rear ranks, those immediately at risk, began to pull back or turned at least to face the threat. Others threw down spears and shields and started to run. But it was already too late for them. A moment later the Gododin reached their foe. There was a loud crash, and then the slaughter began. Cavalry, such as the Welsh used of old, was effective in three ways. Firstly, the men themselves carried spear or sword to pierce, slash and cut at the enemy. Secondly, the speed and weight of these mounts was sufficient to kill or maim by itself. Finally, the sight and noise of several hundred armoured cavalry thundering towards a body of men would cause terror and panic. This alone might be sufficient to break the will to fight of even the most bravest warriors. One moment there was an orderly fighting force, the next a fleeing mass of humanity, ripe for the slaughter. Such was what occurred over on the Darren right wing that day. The flank collapsed, and several hundred warriors broke and began to run in all directions. The Gododin cavalry was amongst them in a flash. Scores of our men died in a moment, falling under the steel and hooves of the enemy. The effect of the charge on the morale of the rest of the Welsh army was instantaneous. Where, 5 minutes ago, their shield wall had been about to crack open, they now pushed back with fresh impetus. So soon we were giving ground all over, while to the north the Gododin cavalry was cutting its way further into our army. As I was in the second rank, it was difficult to do much other than push forward. Then a man to my front was felled by a red-headed Welshman and went down with a scream. The enemy brute, sensing the change in the fortune of the battle, leapt into the space created and hewed to left and right, cutting down our men on both sides and widening the gap in our front rank. Suddenly, I was face to face with a Welsh veteran. Grinning, with yellow teeth dripping with spittle, he swung his axe back, preparing to bring it down upon me. On either side, his companions advanced, pushing their wedge deeper into our line. Grettir, standing behind me, lunged with his spear towards the red-headed warrior, who dodged to his side and then shattered it with a blow from his weapon. However, in doing so he had opened himself up, and I jumped forward and rammed my shield against him, cracking some of his ribs and causing him to cry out in agony. My victory was short-lived, however, as the pain just seemed to intensify his fury, so that he now roared at me, seized my shield and heaved it downwards, and then swung back his axe, preparing to hack at my neck. In desperation, I swung my sword over the top of my shield, bringing it down hard upon his left arm, cutting deep into the muscle and opening an artery, which now spurted forth blood. He shouted an oath at that, and his face screwed up in rage, but, before he could hew at me, Edward, having impaled his own opponent on his spear, followed up by advancing a step, then seized the warrior's weapon arm. Whilst he was distracted, I hacked at him again, and this time my blow landed higher up his arm, on his shoulder. As he went down on one knee, I plunged my blade into his chest, and a great gush of blood drenched my hand. Then, with a final cry of pain, he was dead. Edward picked up the man's axe and swung it wildly at the Welsh behind him, who, taken aback by the death of the great warrior they were following, held back a moment. I slashed at the man to my right and cut his throat open. For a few heartbeats the pressure was off, and gasping for breath we fell back and reformed our shield wall. Along the left wing, where I was fighting, the Darren force was holding well, but it was at the other end of our line where the enemy was directing his wrath. The cavalry were now behind our right wing, and the slaughter went on, so that it could not be long before we broke and all was lost. That moment came all too soon, for now the rout began. Firstly, 20 men at the rear, close to where the monsters on horseback were attacking us, threw down their spears, and turning away ran east towards the camp. Another 20 joined them, then 50 more, until, in a heartbeat, the army turned and ran. Harold shouted at them. He bellowed and cursed as the men ran past him. "Stand firm, you bastards! Come back, you cowards!" But it was no use. Once an army is running, it takes a miracle to stop it, and that day there was to be no miracle. There was just blood, death, and steel, and the horror of 300 heavy cavalry cutting and hacking as we ran. The Welsh shouted in triumph, and, close by now, I could see Owain come forward with Samlin by his side, both laughing in glee. Then, with a huge wave of his arm, which encompassed all his army, he ordered the pursuit. Suddenly, Aidan pushed past me and moved out of the shield wall. He shouted something in Welsh, and both Samlin and Owain stared at him. Aidan drew his sword and moved forward towards them. He was going to challenge Samlin right here in the middle of the rout, but I didn't let him. I seized the collar of his tunic with my hand and dragged him back behind the shields. "Let me go, Curdick." "No, don't be a fool. You dying now won't help." "But I want to kill him."
"So do we all, but let's live today and see about that tomorrow, eh, son?" Edward said.
Aidan slammed his sword against his shield in frustration, but then, after directing another glare full of hatred towards Samlin, he relented. By now we had all moved back a few hundred paces, for the right wing was pinned against Stanwick camp. Its outer ditch and palisades, which had been built to protect our army, now prevented the escape of the very men who were here to defend it. The Gododin rode on and hacked their way into the dense masses of panic-stricken, unarmed warriors who had already abandoned their weapons when they started to run. I was now close to Wallace, Harold, and the Prince. The Prince's house troops were standing firm, and Wallace was shouting at the Wixton Company to join them. Gradually, some sanity returned, and in tens and twenties men started to huddle all around the Prince's company, and those of us with shields attempted to reform our shield wall. The Welsh warriors began to lap round our left wing, just as the cavalry were pushing us from the right. I said there was to be no miracle that day, but there was just a glimmer of hope, for the battle had raged some hours now, and the sun was sinking fast in the west. It would be dark soon, and escape is certainly easier in the dark. There was another hope, one other chance. We had been retreating now for several hundred yards along the southern edge of Stanwick camp, and I suddenly became aware that the gates of the fortress were open and only 100 yards away. If we could just get inside. "My lord!" I shouted at Wallace, but he didn't hear me. I tried again. "My lord!" I bellowed, and this time he turned, so I pointed towards the open gates. He now understood the chance for escape, and he turned to shout over to Earl Harold. Harold frowned at him for a moment, and then nodded and roared out an order to the whole army. "Fall back, but keep it orderly! Fall back, but keep together!" Harold yelled, and we did. With only 50 yards now to go, I felt that we might just make it. Just those very few paces, and we could close the gates and take refuge from the army that wanted to destroy us. Just 40 paces now, but then I saw that it would be no use. 100 of the Gododin cavalry, having finished the slaughter west of the camp, had circled behind their own army and were now passing to the south of us. As they curved around us, their commander saw the open gates of Stanwick camp. He saw us withdrawing in stages, slowly moving towards the fortress and safety. In an instant, he too realized what we were trying to do, and digging in their heels, the horses charged again. If they reached the gate first, we were dead. Chapter 15. The Prince Makes a Decision. Suddenly, Wallace was next to me.
"Curdick, I have to do something fast. If I don't make it to the camp, get the Prince inside and then stay there till your father arrives. Don't let Sabbat persuade Ethelric to leave."
"What?"
"No time to explain," he shouted back over his shoulder. Then he ran out into the open space between the cavalry and the gate. Seeing his example, 20 of the Prince's guards, as well as 12 warriors from Wixton, joined him. More started to go, including Edward, but I held him back, because I now knew what Wallace was doing. He was sacrificing himself to save his prince, his army, and maybe his country. "Harold, we must go now," I yelled.
The Earl of Warwick twisted his head round and nodded at me, and then, pointing at the gates, ordered the rest of the army to get inside as quickly as they could. Meanwhile, Wallace and his men had formed a small shield wall, with Wallace at its centre. His standard-bearer was next to him, and the Running Wolf fluttered in the breeze. The Gododdin charged, and their lances smashed and shattered into Wallace's shields. Half of the shield wall was knocked over in that first charge, and the cavalry milled around and wheeled this way and that, whilst hacking down with swords or jabbing with lances. Still, though, the banner stood, and I could see Wallace swinging a sword with his one good hand and cutting off a cavalryman's head.
"Keep pulling back! Keep it together!" shouted Wallace.
I took up the call and heard it echoed from further along our line. I glanced over and saw Sabbat there, with at least some of his men still alive. 20 yards to go now, and 50 of the Gododdin swerved around the fight surrounding Wallace and started to move towards us. Owen had seen what we were trying to do and was frantically yelling at them to charge the gates to stop us. His own men were pushing forwards now, trying to catch us, trying to slow us down for just a few moments, so the horses could seal our doom. 10 yards to go, and the horses were very close, too close in fact, and I could see now that we were going to be beaten. The horses would reach the gates first. With a whoop they surged forward and blocked our escape, and then turned to charge into our rear. Just then, as I thought we were caught and dead, there was a volley of arrows and a dozen horses fell screaming and kicking. The arrows were coming from the battlements behind us. Cuthbert and the skirmishers had reached the camp before the horses and were firing down at them to drive them away. 5 more Gododdin warriors tumbled from their saddles and the rest swerved away, out of range. Now at last we were passing through the gates. Seeing this, the cavalry came back again and dared the arrow fire to crash into our shields. 6 of our men were knocked down and 3 killed outright, but Edward stepped forward, stabbed up with a spear into the belly of a horse, ran the edge of his shield down to crush the throat of another Gododdin who was floundering on the ground, then pulled one of our men inside by his tunic. Now we were inside the fortress and the gates were already closing. "Push, men, push!" shouted Harold, and together we pushed against the gates to first close them and to hold them shut whilst the gate bar was dropped into its slot. Barrels, carts and logs were now piled up against the inside. I ran up the steps of the battlements and looked down at the Welsh army milling about outside. Our archers continued to fire down upon them, killing or injuring as many at the gate. Finally, after one last attempt to force the entrance, they pulled back and now gave up trying to get inside, for the moment at least. It was getting dark, almost too dark to see more than a few dozen yards, but just at the edge of the gloom I saw the Wolf's Head banner still standing. Wallace and his last few men were surrounded out there, yet they were only 60 yards from the gates. I turned to Harold. "My lord, let me take 50 men and rescue Wallace," I offered. Edward stepped up to my side at once and nodded his agreement, but Harold shook his head.
"Sorry, Curdick, but I cannot spare 50 men.
"But my lord," Harold turned to me.
"No, Curdick. I'm sorry. I know he's your father's friend, but if we open the gates, we will be overrun. Wallace knew this. He chose to do this to save the army. For today, at least," he added gloomily. And we all looked out with a sense of frustration and impotence towards the Wolf banner and its defenders. There were now 500 Welshmen swarming all around Wallace's small company. For a moment I hoped that he might hold them at bay, and perhaps slowly retreat to the fortress. Then the enemy charged as one, and I felt a lump in my throat as I saw the banner fall to the ground and did not come up again. It was finally over. Lord Wallace was dead. On the battlements, Harold squeezed my shoulder and, without a word, left to find Ethelric. Edward placed a hand on my arm as well and tried to comfort me.
"Sorry, Curdick. I know Wallace was a friend of your family as well as of your father. If it helps at all, that was a bloody brave thing he just did. Think about that," he said, and then went to find Cuthbert.
So finally I stood alone, looking towards the fallen Wolf banner and the bodies of our men. I was suddenly overwhelmed by all that had occurred today. Just a few hours ago the prince had spoken of us slaughtering these Welsh invaders, but now those words seemed foolish and naive. Half our army had died, and it was the Welsh who were the triumphant ones, who now believed they had won the Battle of Cattraeth. The truth was, they probably had. I turned my back to the battlefield, and in a daze stumbled to the top of the steps. Wallace's last words came to me, and with the horror of what just had happened still gnawing at me, I went to prevent a prince from running away. I stopped at the top of the steps leading down from the battlements and looked around the interior of the fortress. Fires had been started by the men to warm themselves on this cool night and also to cook on. I realized that I had eaten nothing since that apple before dawn. Gods, but how long ago was that? Yet, I did not feel I could eat. The horrors of the day and the vision of the Wolf's Head banner falling, along with the death of Wallace, churned my stomach, and I felt hollow inside. From where I was standing I could get some idea of the state of the army, and at once could see that we were in terrible trouble. The original garrison at Stanwick Camp had been about 500, and we had brought 400 more spears that morning. We had started the battle then with just less than 1,000 spears. Owain, Samlin, and their allies had over 2,000 men on the field. Both sides had suffered losses, but we had fared far worse. I looked round the camp and wondered how many men we did have left. Walking down the steps and wandering from fire to fire, I glanced at the dirty, drawn faces which stared despondently into the flames or back at me without expression. How many had lost friends today? I figured most of them, most of us. And I might have said that Wallace's company had come out of the day better than most, save that Wallace himself was dead and the company had lost its standard. Along with Wallace, a dozen of his household and most of the veterans had perished. Still, that gave us about 60 men out of 85 alive at the end of the day, including my friends and, mercifully, Grettir. Of course, being alive is one thing, but it's the state you're in that counts. Some had been wounded, and I passed men screaming as they were held down to have arrowheads pulled out of them. Others grimaced and bit on leather straps as wounds were stitched or bones set. Then, of course, there were the wounds to the soul. Men had seen friends cut down and choke on their own blood and vomit, and had been unable to do anything to help them. Each time it happened, they left part of themselves behind, out on the battlefield. In Harold's companies from here Forwick, as well as the ones from the moors, the situation was far worse. 200 men had marched with us from that city. They had shared a camp with us and listened and laughed, just as we had to Cuthbert's tales of our valour. Of them, no more than one man in three sat around those fires. The garrison of Stanwick Camp had been just as badly mauled by the Gododdin. Sabbat's two companies from the coast and the Wolds were probably in the best condition of all, save mine, but even they had lost 30 men each. In all, I estimated our losses at around 400 men. I could not believe that Owain had lost as many as that, but even if he had, that meant that he now had 1,500 spears to our mere 500, three men for every one of ours. I walked towards the hall, knowing even before I entered that Sabbat would be in an uncompromising mood. The hall at Stanwick Camp was a single-room structure built in the previous year when the dangers of Regan's growing strength threatened war one day. War had come, and today it was the scene for a council of war. Ethelric sat despondently in the single tore-backed chair which resembled his father's throne and which occupied the end of the hall. Harold, Sabbat, and half a dozen lesser nobles from the other companies were slumped in scattered chairs and on benches. Harold was eating a roast chicken leg and drinking mead as I entered. He glanced up and rolled his eyes at me and then gestured with his thumb in the direction of Sabbat. It was Earl Sabbat who was speaking now.
"We should leave and leave soon, Your Highness, under cover of darkness. The battle is lost and our only hope is flight," the old lord was saying.
He stopped when he saw me and tilted his head.
"Ah, the young farmer. Well, it seems your father did not come after all. I was certain this campaign was futile," he said again, addressing the prince. "We should leave and go back to the bridge at Cattraeth."
Harold burped loudly.
"You have a comment to add, perhaps, Lord Harold?" Sabbat asked acidly.
Harold pushed his stool back and turned to face him.
"Indeed I do. You say leave. I say how. How could we leave? Owain is out there with two men or more for each of ours. You expect him to just let us go?"
Sabbat laughed at that.
"I expect him to be pissed about now, on mead and ale from our supplies, or having his pleasure with a dozen local girls. They think they have won the battle, and they are damn well right they have. In an hour or two, in the dead of night, we go out, east. Even if they have a guard or two, the main army is off to the west. You can see the fires. We take down the palisade and go out over the ditch to the road and then south to Cattraeth."
I looked at Ethelric, and damn me if he wasn't nodding. I had to change his mind, and quickly.
"Then what?" Harold was asking.
We hold the bridge. The waters are high with the spring rain and also due to the snow melting in the mountains. Owen can only cross at Cattraeth unless he goes out east through the moors, and that is a very long way. We have more companies mustering in the moors if, and again he looked at me, Kenrin has managed to get that right. So we hold them at Cattraeth. We wait for more men and we break them there, Sabbat concluded firmly, and the prince was still nodding. That won't work, I said loudly. Everyone turned to look at me. Please, tell me, farm boy, why won't it work? Sabbat said, his voice dripping with sarcasm. I'm dying to know what your great experience has taught you. I shook my head. I don't have much of that, but I do have a Welshman in my company. Can I bring him in here? Ethelric's head snapped up at that. A Welshman? Here? Why do you want him? Well, I'm sure we would all like to lynch one, and it's easier than going all the way to Owen's camp after all, Sabbat said, and despite myself, even I laughed at that. He has pledged fealty to my father and I. He was talking to the Welsh near Forwick, and I think you need to know something of what he heard, I explained. Ethelric nodded, and I turned and told one of the prince's guards to go and fetch Aidan. Whilst we waited, Harold brought me a cup of mead. I thanked him, and in my thirst drank it quickly, then immediately regretted my action, as on an empty stomach the mead went straight to my head.
How sure are you of your father persuading Ethelfrith? Harold asked me quietly, so no one else could hear. I shrugged. How sure are we of anything in life? We hope for the best, prepare for the worst, and give thanks to the gods if we live another day. Fate takes care of the rest, but you can be sure that he would do his best. He can be very determined when he wants to be, I replied. Harold nodded. Good enough for me. Aidan walked into the hall, and not intimidated by the stares of the assembled lords in the slightest, strode right up to the prince and bowed at him. You wanted to speak to me, your highness, he said. Ethelric's expression suggested he had no intention of doing anything of the sort. He pointed vaguely at me, and Aidan turned to ask me what I wanted. Aidan, I need you to tell the prince what you found out by talking to the Welsh near Forwick. What were they hoping for? The Welshman nodded and paused to collect his thoughts. There exists a sizable proportion of the population of Ere Forwick who are far from happy at being ruled by your father. Sabbat snorted at that. You don't tell us anything we don't already know. Wait, I have not finished. Most of the population have heard the growing rumours of Owen's coming, and stories are going around that you will be slaughtered by him here. Those stories have found a very favourable audience. Again, this is not exactly news to us, Welshman. Your Highness, he has nothing to tell us we don't know, Sabbat said. Give him a chance, my lord, I said brusquely. Aye, let's hear the boy out, Harold agreed. Aidan studied us for a long time, remaining silent whilst he appeared to be weighing up what to say next. Well, are you going to say anything? Sabbat said at last. Will you tell me that you already know what I was about to say if I tell you that right now 500 young Welshmen are armed and in hiding in Ere Forwick? All they wait for is news that the battle here is lost. They will rise up, kill the garrison you left there, and seize the city for Owain. I stared at Aidan. This was news even to me. Sabbat's eyes snapped over to fix me in an outraged glare. You did not think it was worth telling us this before now, he snarled. I shrugged to hide my own ignorance. Would you have believed the words of a Welshman or a farmer? I challenged him in return. Are you sure? Ethelric asked, addressing the dark-haired youth. Yes, Highness. My people are passing knives and swords around. They are arming, and they are waiting. They await one thing. They await news of a victory here, and then they will act.